evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 26, 2021. South Sudan's national security officers detain suspected fake currency dealers in Juba.
The two suspects were respectively apprehended in possession of machine for counterfeiting United dollars, as well as fake dollars amounting to 1,880,000 US dollars.
And some residents of Kejikeji County accuse SPLA-IO forces of harassing civilians in Liwolo Payam.
This kind of torture to the people, they will threaten the movement of people from refugee or from the IDP back to their ancestral home.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Security Service has detained two suspected criminals involved in printing fake U.S. dollars in the capital, Juba. The director for public relations at the National Security Service says 1.8 million fake U.S. dollars, a printing machine, and some materials for printing fake currencies were found in the house where the suspects were operating. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
National Security Services officers ban a stack of fake U.S. dollars at National Security Headquarters in Juba today. The officers put the fake money on a display in front of journalists before pouring petrol on the stack and setting it ablaze. David John Kumuri, Director for Public Relations at the National Security Service, told the reporters the money was seized from the suspects during operations aimed at cracking down on a crime across the country, including counterfeiting.
The two suspects were respectively apprehended in possession of machine for counterfeiting, United dollars, as well as fake dollars, amounting to 1,880,000 US dollars. The suspects are identified as Joseph William Deng, is a South Sudanese by nationality, and Daniel Brown Nema is a Liberian nationalist.
Kumri says Deng was caught with 380,000 fake United States dollars, while Brown was caught with a dollar printing machine and 1.5 million in fake dollars. He sold reporters the confiscated fake money.
If you look at this this note here, you can see it like a paper. You got the point? You can see like a paper and the way the color looks, you cannot differentiate, but once you touch it, you can be able to identify.
Kumri says some of the fake dollars seized have similar serial numbers as opposed to genuine dollars, which have varying serial numbers. He says more counterfeit dollars could be in circulation and urges the public to cooperate with the security agents to combat similar crimes. During a brief interview with the suspects at National Security Service headquarters, Brown, who is 57, told the reporters he has been printing counterfeit currency across South Sudan since 2016.
Because I got involved in money laundering. I have a machine that gives an impression that I clean the black dollar. I give an impression which is not true.
Deng says he started printing fake dollars earlier this month.
This work in South Sudan is everywhere across the country. But you, who is an innocent citizen working for your survival in order to get food, because government has got hold of you, you are apprehended and deemed criminal.
Kumuri says the proliferation of counterfeit money endangers South Sudan's economy.
This press statement highlights the extensive economic destructive activities these organized criminal groups have been engaging in with the aim of satisfying the economic needs at expense of South Sudanese economy. And therefore, we urge the citizen to be aware and remain watchful in respect to these sophisticated illegally financial schemes.
Comrie says the two suspects will be taken to court and charged under Articles 156 and 158 of South Sudan's 2008 Penal Court Act, which forbids counterfeiting. If found guilty, they face 7 years in prison and fines. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The gender-based violence and juvenile court launched last year during a 16-day of activism against gender-based violence in Juba has commenced the sentencing of perpetrators of gender-based violence in Juba. Judge Francis Amomawin says 4 other judges have been assigned to look into gender-based violence and juvenile-related cases. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
Data from Gender-Based Violence Information Management System indicates in the first 3 quarters of 2020, more than 6,000 cases of GBV were reported in South Sudan, with 97% of survivors being women and girls. The Gender-Based Violence Information Management System is a multifaceted initiative that enables humanitarian actors responding to incidents of gender-based violence to effectively and safely collect, store, analyze, and share information on the abusers. To ensure that law enforcement holds rapists and other sexual abusers accountable, the judiciary partnered with the United Nations Development Programme and the Netherlands Embassy in Juba to establish a gender-based violence court in Juba. When launching the court last November, South Sudan Chief Justice Chan Rech Madut said 42 people compromised of investigators, prosecutors, social workers and judges have been trained to investigate, prosecute, and adjudicate gender-based violence cases. Last week, the court tried its second case. 24-year-old Nelson Wani Oliver was found guilty of defiling a 16-year-old girl. Judge Francis Amum Awin, who presided over the case, said, even though it was consensual sex, he found Wani guilty of violating Section 247, Subsection 2 of the Penal Act 2008, which says children are mentally vulnerable and can be easily abused or sexually exploited, and therefore are incapable of giving informed consent. Judge Awin sentenced Wani to 10 years in prison and a fine of 500,000 South Sudanese pounds. Juba resident Alex Anyik, whose daughter was involved in the case, says he is satisfied with the verdict.
It is good for me, it's fair, because at least we are able to realize that there is now law in this country compared to before, where if anybody committed the same crime, you know, is not tried or taken to court at the end of the day, him just being bailed and brought out.
Judge Awin says the new court will ensure justice for survivors of sexual abuse.
Now we have a specialized court working only on cases of gender-based violence court. So this alone is an improvement in the sense that we are having judges now who are handling these cases alone. We have indeed compound like 4 judges. They are only assigned to fraud on cases related to gender-based violence.
The court has received 70 cases and has tried 27 of them so far, according to Judge Awin. 4 were dismissed and 41 are still pending. 56 cases were submitted on behalf of juveniles. 22 have been tried. 12 were dismissed and 22 are still pending. Dina Peter Cirillo is a Juba lawyer and founder of Her Rights, a local organization that fights for women's rights. Cirillo provides pro bono or free services to women who have suffered from injustice, unfair prosecution, torture, and civil law violations. She says due to the backlog in cases of ordinary courts, sexual and gender violence cases are often left pending. With the new court, Cirillo believes perpetrators of sexual violence will be forced to account for their crimes.
Some people also will be open-minded. They will learn from others that who went to that court. Like even someone will say, yes, that court, if I went with this case, they will process it. It will not be like customary court, that every rape case is ending to a marriage because our customary. Like people will start paying some dowry, maybe some rape also ending to pregnancy, child marriage.
Despite the existence of the gender-based violence court and pro bono services that she and other lawyers offer, Cirillo says some sexual survivors are still reluctant to report cases of abuse.
If you are taking this case serious, maybe the parents will come and tell you, no, I don't want it. I don't want to go to court. I just want to close this matter because of my daughter's dignity and such a things, you know. Yeah. So there is this taboo, there is shame. Mostly you take these cases, such cases into court, but maybe next session people will not show up. And though maybe you explain to them you are doing this thing pro bono.
The judiciary also has plans to set up mobile courts across the country to handle sexual and gender-based violence cases for people who cannot access the Juba-based court. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
The bishop of the Episcopal Church in Kajukeji County has condemned what he calls harassment of civilians by armed men in Liwolo Payam. Bishop Emmanuel Mure is urging the parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement to protect civilians in Kajukeji. Some residents and community leaders in Liwolo Payam of Kajukeji County in Central Equatorial State are accusing SPLA-IO forces loyal to South Sudan's Vice President Riek Machar of committing human rights abuses. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
Residents and local leaders say, despite calls to respect civilians' rights, SPLA-IO forces have continued to harass and mistreat civilians in the area over the past 2 months. Bishop Emmanuel Mure of Kajukeji Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan condemns the violations and says parties to the peace agreements will be protecting civilians in areas they control.
This kind of torture to the people, it will threaten the movement of people from refugee or from the IDP back to their ancestral home. This peace arrangement has to be done as soon as possible so that movement is free, no fighting. Like now, we thought people are already in the same system, but there are others who are fighting, for example, in Kajukeji.
A resident who prefers to bed and fight only S. Gideon for fear of reprisal says SPLA-IO forces looted his property and shot at his brother last week.
They took my motorcycle, my 600,000 Ugandan shillings, and we were forced to carry food items, including our goats, to their army base. At the moment, the situation is getting worse because we cannot go to our farms. One of our brothers was shot at on the leg. For now, we don't understand, is Liwolo Payam really part of South Sudan or not?
A 40-year-old woman who prefers to bed and fight only as choice for safety reasons says she was recently gang-raped by 5 armed men.
I was beaten and raped, and I could not have access to health care to determine my health status. We hear that there is peace, but why are these soldiers mistreating us? And what is the government doing to address these problems affecting us?
Both Gideon and Joyce say local residents are finding it difficult to go to their farms to harvest food crops due to the constant intimidation and threats by SPLA-IO forces. Ali Mkue, a head chief in the Liwolo Payam, tells VOA that even though a partial government is in place, civilians continue to suffer.
The SPLA-IO are doing bad things on my civilians. They rape women. Civilians have been arrested and are being beaten. Even our cows are shot down. As a chief, this situation is not good. What is the government doing? We demand these soldiers to be relocated from this area.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel says it is not clear that army forces are committing such crimes.
The SPLA is there, because there is around there. You can't just say the SPLA is doing that. The combat of the SPLA is the one which is in the area. They move around. They're still hunting themselves because that case is not yet being solved. The SPLA-IO don't have problem with any community member or any civilian. Let's not just blame the SPLA-IO only.
Chapter 2 of the revitalized peace deal requires all parties to protect civilians in areas under each group's control. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei, Central Equatorial State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how are health workers combating COVID-19 across Africa? Stay tuned for an answer after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what improvements have you seen in your community over the past year?
I'm seeing infrastructures and services like water, electricity, at least now, alhamdulillah. Because like in 2 years back, we are getting water from the well. And now we have tap water.
Not so much in my community where I come from. Not so much. But I only see people are venturing into business. People are learning business skills every time.
People those days didn't take their children to school. But nowadays, you can see that all people are willing to take their children to school. And also there's some development of the road constructions. There are also buildings around our places.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at efforts to combat COVID-19 across Africa. Malawi says it is recruiting hundreds of health workers to address a shortage as the country deals with a surge in COVID-19 cases. Healthcare workers welcome the move but say the government needs to do more than just hiring nurses. For VOA News, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Government statistics show that about 900 Malawian health workers are currently in quarantine after exposure to COVID-19. 10 of them have died. Dr. Charles Mwansambo is the secretary for the Ministry of Health. Speaking during a televised presidential address on Sunday evening, he said to address the shortage, the government is attempting to recruit 1,380 new healthcare workers from various schools this week.
So there are 219 workers for the central hospitals, 150 workers for CHAM facilities, and 377 for the district hospitals, and we're also recruiting 634 interns.
Malawi is experiencing a lot of challenges under COVID-19, including a shortage of personal protective equipment, or PPEs. Mwansambo said Malawi has set aside about $1.2 million for the procurement of the PPEs. And not only that,
districts where the pandemic is severe have been furnished with emergency treatment units. And our next step is to set up emergency treatment units in each of the remaining districts with a bed capacity between 30 and 60.
In an address Sunday night, Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera said he was concerned with an unprecedented rise in coronavirus cases.
In the past 7 days, we have confirmed a total of 6,675 new infections, which is an average of 953 confirmed infections per day. This means that the average daily number of new infections from this past week is double what it was the previous week.
Chakwera also said in the past 7 days, the daily average number of COVID-19 deaths was more than double what it was the previous week.
COVID-19 deaths in the 7 days between January 10th and 16th were 80. But in the 7 days between January 17th and yesterday, the total was 170. The continued rise in new infections and new deaths over the past week means that the urgent directives that I gave a week ago must continue to be implemented with uncommon speed.
The directives include a nighttime curfew, suspension of schools, and a recommendation that Malawians wear face masks. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The International Labour Organization reports tentative signs are emerging that the world will soon be on the road to recovery this year from the massive job losses brought by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the ILO cautions recovery will be slow, fragile, and uneven. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Latest ILO projections for 2021 show most countries will experience a relatively strong recovery in the second half of the year as global vaccination programs kick in. However, ILO Director General Guy Ryder says this optimistic scenario assumes the pandemic is under control and that consumer and business confidence is good.
But even in this case, we expect global working hour losses will continue throughout 2021, with a gap of 1.3% compared to the end of 2019. And that corresponds to 36 million full-time jobs. And in the Americas, Europe, and Central Asia, those losses would be somewhat higher, around 2%.
While signs of recovery are encouraging, Ryder warns working hour losses will continue throughout this year and beyond. He says financial and social distress for millions of people will not be over. The ILO chief notes the latest analysis of the impact of COVID-19 on the world of work confirms how massively the pandemic affected labor markets in 2020.
This has been the most severe crisis for the world of work since the Great Depression of the 1930s. When comparing with the last quarter of 2019, we now see that 8.8% of global working hours were lost in the course of the year. And that is the equivalent of 255 million full-time jobs.
Ryder notes this is approximately four times greater than the number of jobs lost during the 2009 global financial crisis. The ILO reports the majority of these job losses were a result of people dropping out of the labor market because they were unable to work or because of pandemic restrictions. In many cases, it says, people just gave up and stopped looking for work. The report says massive job losses resulted in a loss of $3.7 trillion of global labor market income, or 4.4% of global gross domestic product. It finds women and young people are those hardest hit by the pandemic's labor market disruption. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists in South Africa have already established that a variant of COVID-19 identified in the country in December is more infectious and thus more transmissible than the original coronavirus. Now, they are trying to find out if the variant called 501YV2 is causing more people to be reinfected. COVID-19 has so far claimed the lives of more than 41,000 people and infected about 1.8 million in South Africa. For VOA News, Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Researchers have shown that the variant helps the virus to escape from antibodies. But Kuleka Mlisana, a microbiologist at South Africa's National Health Laboratory Service, or NHLS, wants to know much more about 501Y.V2. She and her team of scientists have been studying it since its existence was confirmed.
So we then had to look to see, are we seeing reinfections in the country in the first place, and then relate that to the variant. Now that we have got this variant, are the reinfections a lot more than we had been seeing during the course of the pandemic?
Mlisana explains that most people who get COVID-19 mount an immune response that usually is strong enough to prevent them from being infected a second time. But she adds, the variant is complicating things.
It might actually be because the new variant that is coming in, the body has actually not been stimulated to that immune response, and therefore you would get a reinfection.
Her team first had to establish the extent of COVID-19 reinfections in the country using data collected from all tests done for the virus at the NHLS since the pandemic began in the country in March last year.
When we were at the 6th of January, we had actually done more than 6.7 million tests and we had 150,000 cases. And we therefore analyzed to see, are there any individuals who had a positive test and then a second positive test 90 days or more later? As of the 6th of January, with this, you know, analysis, we had more than 4,000 potential reinfections, which therefore says to us, we are getting reinfections.
But, says the scientist, it's too early to say what's driving the reinfections and which groups of people are susceptible to getting COVID-19 a second time. Mlisana says she and her colleagues have seen enough reinfections to make a preliminary finding.
So far, we are able to say there is no evidence that suggests that the risk of reinfections is increasing as a result of the new variant. But bear in mind, we are only talking a month so far. We are going to continue to monitor this data and to look to see whether there's any change. If right now...
Her team's going to isolate cases of reinfection to see if reinfected patients have more serious clinical symptoms the second time round, and to try to determine if they're linked to the new variant.
By doing this research, we're going to be able to actually gain more knowledge and we'll be able to interpret this variant and the impact that it has on the reinfections a lot better.
Mlisana says COVID-19 is cleverer than anticipated, and it may well turn out that a second, as yet unidentified variant is responsible for new cases and even reinfections in South Africa. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song "Lock Me Gua" by Nya JJ.
Hi, JJ. Young boy. Lock me gua and shenan. Jack, Kawarina. Don't make a more day, Gangja. Come here by your bed. Will Lloyd do bad? Don't care.
What am I? Lloyd, they are making Lloyd, the kind of make them run.
Lloyd do and buy your key. Nyal buy your key. Baby. Lloyd do go and shenan. Jack a jack a quarry nyal. Don't make a more day. Come here buy your key. Will Lloyd do bad? Don't dan care.
For the mighty Lloyd, the jam.
We've been listening to Nya JJ with the song "Lock Me Gua." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow at the same time for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Chinook, what a juk,